Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show. What's up guys, Coach Steve here. Welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
Really well, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited for this week. We are in week 2 of the November Challenge. So we've powered through this first week. Some individuals are starting to see some results already, which is great, which is awesome. And then, you know, others are just like starting to set the foundation in place, building up into their habits and really just getting into the crux of it. So, you know, we've kind of gone through that first week, rolling into week 2. And then, you know, before you know it, these next 6 weeks is going to be over and we're going to be scratching our heads about what we're going to do next. So it's going to fly by really soon. So stay focused, stay hungry and get the job done, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 6 weeks is get in, get out. That's it just goes so quickly. Before we know it, we'll be right up to Christmas and announcing the winners. So just stay focused.
Yes. Now, Nick, you and I have been quite busy over the past week answering lots of questions on the forum. So we basically live on the forum and we've got a pretty good turnaround time. I'm quite proud of it. Usually within the hour, whereas one of us has offered some advice onto a question on the forum. But, you know, our benchmark that we want to meet is that we want to give you an answer within 24 hours. So often it's usually within the hour. But, you know, Nick and I do sleep. We're humans. So we may not get it within the hour, but you know, we guarantee that we'll get you an answer within 24 hours on the forum. Now, we do have other areas where people try to interact with us, Nick. You know, that could be our Facebook social hub, now renamed our social hub. We also have people messaging us through our Maxine Challenge Messenger. Some of us try to personally message us. Some of us try to message us on places like Instagram and stuff. So, you know, we don't have a lot of time to answer lots of areas of questions because we just live on the forum. So if you do have an urgent question for us about fitness, health, the challenge, anything like that, please reach out to us on the forum. That's where we want to help you. And, you know, that's where we can kind of guarantee the best answer for you too, because, you know, these social areas such as Instagram, Facebook, you know, you get hundreds of responses from different people, all from all different levels of qualification and experience, which might be great for certain questions. But if you want some really technical answers, the best place to reach to us is on the forum. Okay.
Definitely. And if it's something that you think that you should maybe ask someone like a doctor about, chances are that's what we'll tell you as well. So just think about that as well. Just if it's something that your doctor has maybe told you, probably they're the only ones that can really give you an answer on that. Not everybody else. And so just be mindful of that.
Absolutely. Like one of the most common questions we get on the training thread is questions around injuries. Now, it's lucky that I've gone and studied and I am an osteopath, so I do help people with injuries. But that's in a clinical setting where I'm face-to-face with someone, assessing them, speaking to them on a personal level about lots of factors, not the injury themselves, but them as a human, which may be lost in the medium of the internet. So if you are experiencing an injury, the best form way forward is to speak to a registered healthcare professional. So not, you know, your cousin who might be a massage therapist or something. Like, you know, we want to speak to someone who's a registered healthcare professional who can offer you some good advice on how to manage your injury. And that would be the first thing that we recommend if you come to us with an injury is speak to your registered healthcare professional. And then once you get some guidance from them, we might be able to offer you some advice on how you can modify your program to fit your needs. Okay.
Yes.
Now, week 2 is a great time to kind of like sit and reflect. Okay. I know we just started, but you know, the concept of reflecting is really important, Nick. You know, you and I do it all the time.
Yes.
No matter what our goal is, let that be to build strength, build our physique, maybe to lose some body fat, or maybe gain some body weight, whatever our goal is, we often, you know, start the process and then reflect on that. So, you know, we're in week 2 right now. And for many people, the approach to the challenge is one of just sheer guts and effort and grind. You know, it's this very like can-do, stoic approach to it, being like, I'm just going to grind it out. And, you know, that willpower is finite. You know, it doesn't last forever. You know, we're really motivated in week 1. We're excited. We can do the hard things. But then as we get into week 2, week 3, week 4, and heck, even year 2, year 3, year 4 of your fitness journey, you know, that willpower dies. You know, we can't rely on it forever. And what we can rely on is our routines and our environments. And it's a great time now to reflect on your previous week and how you've approached that previous week. Has it been easy for you? Has it been challenging for you? And I guess with the name of the challenge, part of it is meant to be challenging, right? Part of it is meant to be a little bit tough. But you know, there might be steps that you can make right now to modify your environment to make it easy for you. And that could be having some tough conversations with friends and family. That could be reorganizing your living room so that, you know, maybe you've got some space to do some home workouts, or maybe you restructure your day so that you wake up a little bit earlier. So maybe you can go for a little walk for half an hour before the kids wake up or something, right? So, you know, modifying your environment is really powerful. Modifying your habits are really powerful. And the first step to do that is to reflect on your journey so far. And I know it's only week two, but this is a great time to kind of catch it before it falls, because often when we get to that maybe week three, week four, we throw our hands up being like, it's too hard now. I've lost my willpower. I've lost motivation. I've fallen off the wagon and I might be able to catch it right now.
Definitely. And a little tip that I have just following from that is don't make the stuff hard that doesn't need to be hard. Like training might be hard. Some other things in your life might be hard that have to be hard, but don't make those little things hard that you can actually make easier for yourself. So that's the time to just reflect and go, could I go to bed a little bit earlier? Could I clean up my environment a little bit? Even just cleaning up, you know, your pantry, that sort of a thing. Just make things easier that can be easier, because everybody has hard things that they can't make any easier in their lives. So you've got to work around it. That's my hot tip.
I like it. That's good advice. Now, Nick, one of my favorite things to do when I'm not answering questions on the forum is to follow other challengers' journeys on places like our journals. Now, we do have a range of social areas where you know, you can interact with other challengers. That could be like our social hub on Facebook. That could be like places like Instagram, following our hashtags, or you know, involving yourself in the conversation on the forum groups. Now, to really kind of feel that sense of community, it's great to kind of read through other journal posts to see where other challenges are. And what's pretty cool is that, you know, we're in week two of the challenge, or day, you know, 7, 8, 9 of the challenge, and many challengers are starting to write their journals. And you could see the latest journal posts if you go through the community area on the website. And by reading some of those journal posts, you know, you have this sense of like camaraderie with someone. You don't know them. You know, you might see like John Smith, and he's posting about how it's week two and he's finding it challenging, but you know, he's getting up early and gonna go do it. And you might feel like, oh yeah, you know, if this guy, John, I don't even know where he lives, if he's even in Australia, but he's doing it, I'm gonna do it too. And that could be a little bit of a boost. So I'm gonna invite you to you know, go check out some of the journal posts and create some journal posts of yourself. It's a great way to reflect on your journey. So at the end of the challenge, you can look through your previous journal posts. You can write about anything you want, maybe some non-scale victories like we'll go through in a moment, or maybe, you know, some challenges that you faced, or just something about your day. So go check out the journals area on the challenge website.
Yeah, I love looking at the journals, and I love it when people put effort into their journals, because as I always say, writing stuff down is a really good way to make sure that it happens. It's also a good way to audit your progress, to have a look at what's going on. Sometimes when you write it down, you become very clear about what you need to do. And also, it's just great to reflect upon that journey as you progress, because you can realize how far you've come, especially once you get to a little bit more advanced, and day to day you can't see the changes, but you can always look back and go, whoa, look where I've come from. So it's really great to have that journal.
Yeah, it really is. Now, to reward, a little bit of incentives, a little bit of a reward to those who are posting in the journals, we want to introduce a new weekly prize. Okay, so previously we were giving out away a small prize to those that post in our Facebook social hub. So those individuals that are posting on things like Technique Tuesday, or What's on Your Plate Wednesday, or our favorite Flex Friday. So we were drawing a name out of the hat and sending that individual a small prize, and we want to now move that prize to the journals. So what we are going to do is we are going to collect the names of everyone who writes a journal post in that week put all those names into a hat. And then in our weekly live question answer, which is on Monday nights at 7 p.m. Melbourne time, which is live streamed to our social hub, we are going to be pulling a name out of the hat and then announcing them as our weekly prize winner. We will then be posting that on the forum. So we'll be starting a new forum thread, weekly prize winners. And for example, it'll be week two winner is John Smith. And we'll be sending that winner a small prize pack to the address that they put in on the challenge when they signed up. So that's a nice little prize of maybe a shaker bottle, maybe some bars, maybe some cookies, maybe some little samples. Nothing crazy, nothing wild, but just a little bit of a pick-me-up. And heck, maybe you get a little handwritten note from Coach Nick egging you on to keep on going, which I think will be really cool.
Absolutely. You can force me to work my hand muscle.
Yeah, you gotta work those intrinsic muscles.
Yeah, my writing muscles, oh gosh, they need a bit of work. So let's get that going. And I think it's really important for us to create that massive buzz around the journals, and the journals are a thing. Let's make the journals a thing again.
Make journals great again.
Yes.
I'll just steal that slogan from our friend. Yeah. Anyway,
it's a good way to reappropriate it.
Yes. In a positive way. I think if we are going to start writing handwritten notes, Nick, we both better start practicing our handwriting.
Yeah, I'd say so. I haven't seen anything of yours that I can read yet. So
no. I have gone full swing into my doctor's handwriting. I can't even read my handwriting anymore. I think I spend too much time on computers.
It's an essential thing for you as a doctor to have that. So you've got an excuse in a way.
In a way. And if I didn't have messy handwriting, no one would take me seriously.
Yeah, like, what is this? Would you even be a doctor if you didn't have messy handwriting?
Right. And I think my theory is that, you know, doctors spend a lot of time, you know, reading, researching, that type of thing. Not a lot of time writing things down. So that's kind of like their path to victory of, I don't write a lot because I'm reading so much. That's why my handwriting goes to crap. So that's why they do the little scribbles.
Yeah, well, yep. That could be it.
Well, that's my rationale, right?
Yep. So we can practice. Anyway, you'll be getting handwritten notes from us, and hopefully you'll be able to see that we can actually write our names, a little message that you can read.
We're not in the fifth grade.
That's our task. Write.
Yep. I'm excited to teach baby George one day how to write, and maybe he'll get his pen license. And
hopefully pens are still around when baby George is at school.
Yeah, geez. You know, if you fast forward 10 years when baby George is at school, maybe everything is like writing down on a tablet, you know, and he's just holding a little stylus writing. And what is paper? Who knows?
And he might say to you, Dad, your codes and formulas and things that you do are so old.
Yeah. He's like, geez, you hard coded this. You could do it this way. It's easier, and make me look like an idiot. Like, thanks, son. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that day. That's going to be good.
Yes.
Okay. Nick, moving on to our next segment here. We are going to look at some non-scale victories for the week.
Yes.
Now, I love non-scale victories. I think they're really cool. Nick, I know you love them too. I think they are a great way to look at the wins that we are facing in the challenge. That might not be based around, you know, our body weight. And it's really cool. So, Nick, take us through some of these non-scale victories that you have found this week.
All right. So I've got Courtney Reading. She's the first one to come up. And Courtney's been quite active on the Facebook group. It's really good to see that she's really committed to this challenge. So Courtney says, day four. So this is from her day four. Still going strong. I'm loving eating this way. It's so great that I decide what to eat, but the template gives me the portion sizes. I wanted to talk about a little NSV I had yesterday too. I had a catch up at my mother's group where lots of the girls brought a bunch of snacks. There was cheese, crackers, cookies, chocolate, and caramel slice. All of those things start with a C, by the way. So it's obviously, we've got to cut out the C's.
I see what she did there.
But then she goes, but all I had was a few carrot sticks and stuck with my apple and burn bar while sipping on my sip and burn. I'm so committed to this challenge that I didn't even think about having any of it. And it's a huge victory for me. So isn't that great? Because what she's done is she's popped herself straight into day four, into a social setting where there's often a little bit of pressure because food can be associated with your socialization, you know, interacting with people. And sometimes especially when you're new to creating routines and things, you can feel like you have to use food as part of that interaction, especially in a mother's group where you're all just getting to know each other. So the fact that she's just gone and said, it's all okay, I'm just going to have what I need to have and what I want to have, is a really good victory, a really good NSV for Courtney.
I like that. I think Courtney was confronted and conflicted by having certain foods such as carrots, crackers, cookies, chocolate, and caramel while on the challenge, and she could keep on going.
Like, where was Carol?
But if she hangs out with her friend Carol, she can see the end. I digress.
She can continue
with the challenge.
To have courage
to keep, well, that's okay, ongoing.
Yeah, but it could be keep like in a cool kind of kid way where they say keep
with a cool kid way. Yeah, yeah. I reckon we'll get Courtney a keep cup for her coffee in the morning. That's
incredible.
Like that. Incredible. Okay, I'll stop. Congratulations, okay. Courtney. Really cool.
K with a C. Very good. Very good, Courtney. Very good. Love it. Okay, so now we've got Roxanne. Non-scale victory today, Roxanne Stevenson. So she says, non-scale victory, I actually did an evening gym class. I'm normally at the gym in the afternoon. Happy I went. So I'm guessing that normally she's got her routine and possibly she skipped it for whatever reason. And usually you might go, I'm too tired. You know, there's no way I'm going to the gym at a different time. Especially once it gets to nighttime, I personally find that if I'm not teaching a class or doing something where I have to be somewhere, it's my time to just basically not do anything. So to have that discipline to go and to get through the day and get it done is fantastic. And she might have found that she really enjoyed it. So well done, Roxanne. Good non-scale victory there.
Awesome.
And then I have got Tatum Sutherland. She's from the journals, so this was from her journal post. Now, I like this one because Tatum talks about our podcast, which makes me happy because anytime that someone gets something out of anything that we do, it just gives me a thrill to think that somebody's listening to us and actually absorbing the information and taking it on board is fantastic. So she says, podcast, not just because of the information, but because I like Coach Steve and Nick's banter. So she'll like the C's from this one.
All about the banter. I love it.
We've topped it so far with our C's. Okay. I find them really entertaining. So it's lucky that we do what we do. Today's podcast was what stories do you tell yourself? So this was really relevant for me, she says. As I walked, I wrote down the stories I tell myself on a regular basis in no particular order. So she tells herself, one, my DNA will not allow my physical appearance to change. Two, I can't work out when I'm PMSing or on my period. So basically 2 weeks of the month I give up due to slight discomfort. Three, I hate being in the wind. Four, I never finish anything. Five, I have no willpower. Six, I can't work out in the afternoon because I'm too tired. I say this even when I have energy, ha ha. Seven, I am the way I am due to previous traumas, and because I can't change those traumas, I cannot change myself. Basically, these thoughts have been ruminating in my head for the past forever. Very all or nothing thinking. I'm more capable than I know. I like how the coaches discussed our vocabulary when it comes to things and how it is important we are careful that we are using the right words. I need to work on that too. I'm determined I'm going to have a good day today. So what I love about that is that she's really hit the nail on the head with what stories we tell ourselves, with the way that we describe ourselves to ourselves. And sometimes when you can let that go, it means that you have a whole new world opened up to you. There's no reason why you can't grow muscle. But often we say, oh, my parents didn't, and or it's not something that I can do. And so just to take that and flip it around is awesome.
I love that, Tatum. That's really cool. And I'm glad you enjoy our banter and maybe take away a few points of information. But I do think this podcast that you're talking about is really cool. What stories do you tell yourself? And I think that is important because, you know, you start at your thoughts, then it usually ends in your body. So if you think that you can't do it, well, you can't do it. If you think that you're tired, well, I guess you're tired then. If you think that, you know, you have no willpower, well, goodbye willpower. So Tatum, that's powerful things. You're making powerful changes and keep on going.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Now I've got a few here. I went on a little bit of a roll through Instagram today. So the first one here comes from at I am Jessica Phillips. So I wonder who that is. And she writes, after just 1 week, I'm feeling good. I'm not tired. And for the first time in 12 months, I have put on 2 kilos. This is huge for me. I just love that where, you know, her big achievement is that she put on weight, where often, you know, we are talking about individuals that want to lose weight and she's put on weight. And for the first time in 12 months, she achieved that. Awesome. Congratulations, Jessica. And she says, I've even had a sneaky couple of wines. If you know me, you'll know I'm all about healthy consumption, and who says you can indulge and be strict at the same time?
Yeah, and I love that. I really do. And I really noticed that she was talking about, being really conscious. This was on the Facebook group as well, about needing to up her calories a little bit. So that is just, that's brilliant, that revelation as well, because it does go both ways. We just don't hear about it very much with the idea of dieting. We never hear about the other side of it. And you and I are quite passionate about the other side of it. So when somebody's actually reflecting that back to us, we love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it might be a bit of a surprise to some of those listening to us that it can be more challenging to gain weight than losing weight.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially if you've bound up your identity in a certain way about how you look and things. But the thing is, sometimes progress can only be made by going the other way. And when you get to that point, it's very rewarding, but it can bring up a lot of different things. So it's good to be in a community where everybody here, particularly in the challenge, everybody champions those muscles, and those muscles really can only be grown by fueling your body.
So the next one here comes from at T-Roy's Life. So Troy on Instagram, the main takeaway here is that it's all about small steps, right? Small steps and patience, we'll get there. Good plan was on point yesterday. Important to get the momentum early on. That's all he writes. And I like this, where we're just at the start. It's important to kind of build that momentum, build that habit, that routine. It's all about the small steps. Be patient. For many of us, Rome isn't built in a day. For many of us, it's a year-long, multi-year-long journey, and it's not going to be achieved in just 1 week. But those little increments, like, pay dividends over time. Like 1% every day can lead to, you know, huge, huge increases over time. So congratulations, Troy. I think you're teaching us an important lesson here.
So true. And I always just like to say, probably just to myself, but the time will pass either way. So that's a good way to think about it when you kind of go, oh my gosh, what am I achieving today? The time's going to pass either way, whether you've done that little thing or not. So just think about it like that.
The last one here goes to Cassie Mays, and this was on the journal. And she writes, bloat is going and energy is up 100%, right? Doubled energy, 100% up. New weight machine this weekend, yay. Now I can push myself further in my home gym. Looking forward to week 2 and what it can bring for me. That's awesome, Cassie. I'm a little bit jealous that you have some space for machines in your home gym. Hopefully it's something really cool, maybe like a pendulum squat, if you know what I'm talking about with that. But yes, Cassie, awesome to see. And congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week. You know, Nick and I are always looking out for non-scale victories across all of our social platforms, let that be forum, journal, Facebook, Instagram. We're not really on places like TikTok and such, but we can if there are people there as well.
I have to put on my new learning pants and go and check out TikTok.
Check out TikTok, yeah.
I've been a bit resistant to it, but I think, look, it is the way it is. It's the new thing. So, I mean, it's probably not, actually. It's probably the old thing.
Yeah, it's been around for, like, what, 12 months more? Yeah. We're old to the party, yeah.
I know. Look, my daughters do it, but I think that that's all they've said to me, don't, because there was one point where we were doing something on TikTok for the advertising for the challenge, And I said to my girls, I'm going to be on TikTok. And they said, oh, please don't be on
TikTok. Don't, Mum. Don't do the dances, please.
Yeah. Yeah. So they said, that's not where you should be.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Nick, like, I'm not, I don't like to feel like I'm getting old. Like, I'm 28. People were listening to this being like, Steve, you're a child. You know, you're still a kid.
You baby.
But, you know, like, there's this quote from The Simpsons of all places that just stick with me. You know, I used to be with it. I used to be in with it until they changed what it was. And now I have no idea. Like, kids these days, I'm like lost. I'm like, TikTok, what is this thing? I try to keep up, no idea. And I now understand how my parents felt when I was a teenager running around doing dumb things. And I know it's going to be exactly the same when baby George grows up. So, geez, getting old.
Yeah, look, but if anyone wants to do anything like that, if you want to make something crazy on TikTok and tag us in it, or we love that. Love it. Any type of exciting stuff, please go ahead. You know, that'd be awesome.
Now, Nick, moving on to our next segment here, we are talking about our coach's tip for the week, where Nick and I will offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, kick us off. What advice do you have for us?
Okay, so Nicola Gibbs is going to get excited again because I know she regularly listens to this podcast, and she comes up with some good questions because she's been really thinking. She did a bit of a building phase, and now she's doing her her shredding phase, like where she's trying to lose just a little bit of body fat for summer for her red bikini. So she's interacting with us a lot, just checking what's going on. And this question that she asked was a bit about a diet break and if she needs it, and also are all carbs equal? So I'm just going to break this down for her, but also just for anyone else who's interested. So with a diet break, it's basically bringing your calories up to maintenance or a little bit higher just for 1 or 2 days. It can either be called a diet break, or some people call it a refeed as well. I think that's a popular term as well for that particular thing. But basically, when you've been in a calorie deficit for a while, your body can actually show signs of stress. It can show signs of fatigue, and it can actually be detrimental to stay in that deficit and actually not do what you would like it to do, which is shed body fat, especially if your cortisol, if your stress is high, you're going to hold on to everything. Your body doesn't know if you are being chased by a lion or just cutting some calories for a little while. That's the thing. It doesn't quite know. So it's going to hold on. Our bodies are pretty adaptable, and also they can take a lot. So 1 week in, my advice is to just keep going. Now, if we're talking about, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks in, that's when it starts to get pretty hard, when you're dragging yourself around. You know, you've dieted, Steve, you know, that where you feel like every step is an effort in your steps, and you think about food all the time, and you're kind of tending towards maybe almost wanting to just eat everything that exists. That is when you can have a diet break. I mean, you can have one anytime. They're always there. We've built them into the template. But to have one when you feel like that, to recognize those signals and not just to panic, because I think the first week when you're in a diet, your body panics, you panic, you're not sure if you'll ever see food again, even though the calories aren't super low on our plan. But that's not necessarily the time. You've got to kind of push through. But when you get to that point where you want to eat everything and you know, the kitchen sink, that is where you can bring in a diet break. Now, the thing is, I think people get scared of them because they think it means a break from your diet, so therefore you're going to go ham. It doesn't actually mean that. It means just bringing the calories up. But as we both spoke about, it's actually your weekly average. So it only brings your weekly average up by, say, 80 to 100 calories a day. So that's not too bad. It's not going to be the end of the world. So you've got to think about it like that. And also, it can really have some positive effects on just all your biofeedback, which is then going to help you feel better to continue on. And also, it can help you then get that little bit of a training boost in the gym, which is, I think you and I both agree that training is key. You know, we do say that nutrition is key, but you want to train hard when you're in the gym. So important. So to be able to have that little bit of a break, a little bit of a boost, is very, very good. So take it if you need it. The only thing I would say is with the 6-week challenge, short, sharp, and as you, if you've been in a surplus prior, then you can probably hold out for a couple of weeks just to get yourself in that groove of actually dieting, because dieting doesn't feel pleasant. So you've got to sort of weigh it up. If it's feeling a little bit unpleasant, feeling a little bit hungry, because that's actually, that can be a positive sign, versus dragging your butt up a hill that isn't even a hill and you're not sure what's going on. So there's sort of two differences there. So that's diet breaks, and that's where I think they come in. So then we've got the carbs, the carbohydrates. So a carb is a carb, but the thing is, I think that there are particular carbs that can function better in the body, especially when you're dieting. So you think volume foods, because the problem is, say with a bread or a pasta, there's nothing wrong with them. They're beautiful, but it's, you can overconsume them really quickly. And it's also what you can have with them. So with your bread, you can have, being Italian, you know, a whole bunch of olive oil. Italians, we dip our bread in like a vat of olive oil just as an entree. So, you know, that kind of a thing isn't necessarily conducive to your diet. So with carbs, you want to look for ones that are, satiating volume. Just when you're on a diet, you want to think of things like whole grains, fruits and veggies, because fruits and veggies have carbs. So you don't have to just think of carbs as sort of your chips and chocolate and things. It's often what you pair with carbs that make them, it's not the carb itself, it's what you pair with it, the yummy foods, the ones like the bread and the butter and things like that. It's just, it's what goes with it, and it's how you can overconsume them that's a bit of a problem, not the carbs themselves. So I wouldn't demonize carbs. And within your challenge when you are dieting, it's probably better to go for the higher volume carbs, like your veggies, like things that you can grab and have more of, like pumpkin, potatoes are great as well, to be honest, because they're very filling. You can't overconsume them. I think you can't really have I probably could, but you can't really have more than two potatoes in one sitting if they're quite big. So whereas you could have, I could have a whole loaf of bread if it was there and it was the right time, if I just trained. So yeah, that's my little take on those two things.
No, I like it. I just want to touch on what you spoke about the mixture of carbs and another food that makes it tasty. And this is actually a really interesting one, because if you think about carbohydrate on its own, most people would describe it as boring. Okay, here's a thought experiment. You know, let's say you have just a piece of toast. Some people, you know, we like it because of the texture. Maybe you get that little bit of a scratch down your throat in the morning when you lost your voice or something. But what's tasty about toast is when you put butter on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Think about rice. You know, has anyone just sat there and ate straight rice? It's pretty boring. We want to put something on there. What often goes into that rice? Some sort of sauce, I don't know, like a curry, a bolognese or something like that. It has an element of fat on it. Similar with pasta. You know, you don't just eat plain pasta. You have pasta with like a bolognese and like Parmesan cheese. We've got carbs and now we've got fat. Straight sugar, if you had a spoonful of straight sugar, you'd hate it, but it's that sugar mixed in with something like flour to create like a muffin or a cake that we find really tasty. So even that example of a potato, eating a straight potato for most individuals are boring, but if you had a baked potato with some butter, some sour cream, some bacon in there, you'd probably mouth start salivating and be like, oh yeah, I know that taste, that's really good. And having straight carb is often very boring. And what we crave is a mixture of carb and fat. That's what we crave, carb and fat together. And that's where we face problems with processed foods, baked goods, because it is carb and fat together. And humans, we just can't control ourselves with that ratio. Yeah, carbs aren't the devil, but it can get really complicated when we have carbs and fat, because that can be very high in calories.
It's the combo, it's the vibe. And then it just, that, even though that's from the castle, it reminds me, it's like, it's not the food, it's what you do with it. So it's combining those two that's a little bit lethal. And I know, like, I'll just tell you a quick story. If I'm deep in prep, or if I'm cutting or doing anything like that, I know that I'm in trouble when I start to crave raw cake mix. So like an egg mixed with butter, mixed with flour, mixed with sugar that I make myself. and I don't even bake.
Oh, gosh.
So just things like that. But that's just your body just going, okay, get some carbs and fat into you. It's instant energy. It's just, you need to plan around that. So, you know, if you go for your fruits, your veggies, things like that, like I could have just eaten an apple rather than all of that and felt pretty good. So just plan what sort of carbs you're going to have, and you'll find that you don't crave it if you don't do it. It goes away, the craving. It's just if you keep doing it, your body's going to keep wanting it as well.
Good old carbs, our friends.
They are. They actually are. They're fantastic. It's just you've got to learn about how to use them.
For me, I'd like to talk about how fast can we actually build muscle?
Well, this is good. I think everybody will be interested in this. Absolutely.
How fast can we actually build muscle? And once we kind of understand this concept, we can have better understandings of what's happening in our body while we're doing the challenge, while we're trying to improve our body composition, and while we're trying to lose weight. So we are talking about weight loss, and to do that, we're better understanding the rate of building muscle. Okay, so the first thing I'll say is that muscle building is really difficult, really hard. It takes lots of energy for our body to build muscle, and it occurs via stimulation. So we're trying to stimulate the muscle, we're trying to stimulate the cells around our muscles, and trying to stimulate our nervous system to trigger the response of hypertrophy to make the muscle grow. From a mechanistic point of view, the way that the muscle grows is via depositing amino acids. Okay, so when I say amino acids, I'm referring to protein, because when we break down protein, we get amino acids. Same with like a carbohydrate, you break down carbohydrate and you get a sugar, right? You break down a fat molecule, you get fatty acids. So we're just breaking down our protein, we get amino acids. The way that the muscle grows is via depositing amino acids onto the muscle belly. Now, the maximum rate that we see in studies of depositing of amino acids is about 10 grams per day.
Okay,
10 grams per day of depositing amino acids, so we're building muscle tissue. Now, that's for, you know, a normal person like you and I, not an individual that's using some, complicated supplements that require injections and under the table deals. We're not talking about those individuals. We're talking about individuals who may be new to training, lifting weights. The maximum rate that we can build muscle is at about 10 grams. You know, some of them say 11, some of them say 13, some of them say 9. Let's say about 10 grams per day.
Wow. So that's less than half a kilo a year.
Yeah. Well, there's more to it, Nick. There's more to it. So when we look at muscle tissue is about 2/3 water. So when we look at that 10 grams per day of amino acid, we also need another 20 grams of water to create that like tissue. Okay. So we can really look at it at about 30 grams per day of extra weight growth in muscle. And that would be like kind of that maximum end. So if you're a super beginner, you're coming off the couch, you've looked at a dumbbell for the first time, your nutrition side of things is perfect, everything's like perfect, okay, you might be that maximum 10 grams per day. If you are that maybe intermediate weightlifter, you've been training for 12 months or so, and you're taking a very average approach to your, let's say, nutrition and lifestyle factors, you might be sitting at that bait maybe 5 grams per day. You might be really advanced, like Nick and I, everything might be perfect, but through some factors like genetics and such, you might be cruising at like 3 grams per day, okay? So it's very individual based upon training levels, genetics, lifestyle factors, nutritional factors. But we'd say maximum rate is about 10 grams per day of amino acid depositing plus an extra 20 grams of water. So we're looking at 30 grams per day, okay? Putting it into context like you did, Nick, that equates to about 200 grams per week or 210 grams per week of muscle, which would be the amino acid in the water. That would be about 840 grams per month, okay? If you're doing the 6-week challenge, that would be about 1.2 kilos of growth in that 6-week mark. And then if you're training for a year at the maximum rate of 10 grams of amino acid per day with 20 grams of water, you could see about 11 kilos of muscle growth per year. Okay. We know that that's not realistic for some individuals because that's the maximum amount. So for people like you and I, Nick, heck, if we gain a kilo of muscle in a year, we'll be celebrating. Other individuals, they could just look at a dumbbell and they'll gain that, you know, 5 kilos of muscle in a year because they're so new to the training stimulus. Okay, so that's just putting some weight gain in context. So often individuals would join the challenge or start a weight loss journey and, you know, would really start looking at their scale weight, which is a great metric to track our progress. But when we've been going through fitness for a month, 2 months, 3 months, we might be looking at our scale weight and it's simply not moving. And that's okay, because that's just giving us information. Some individuals, their response would be like, oh, well, I'm just gaining muscle. Okay. Which might be true, because if you've been doing it for, let's say, a month, you might be, you might have gained, you know, like 800 grams or like a kilo of muscle in a month if you are at maximum rates, and then you might have lost a kilo of body fat. So what that happens is our body stays at this kind of same weight, okay? But that's quite rare. That's quite a very finicky process. And here's the other side of the conversation, talking about how quickly can we lose body fat. Here's a fun one.
That's interesting.
So here's a thought process. A kilo of body fat is about 7,700 calories, depending on, you know, which expert you talk to and which research you're referring to, about 7,700 calories of energy in a kilo of fat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were at an energy deficit of about 500 calories per day, which is pretty normal, most of us in the challenge would be at about 500 calorie deficit per day, unless you are a small individual, let's say even smaller than Nick, who you need to, your total daily energy expenditure is 1500 calories. Okay, you can't have a 500 calorie deficit, or that's, you know, 30%+ deficit, too high. Okay, very individual, but let's say 500 calories per day. Putting it into perspective, right? It will take 15 days at an energy deficit of 500 calories per day to lose 1 kilo of body fat. Okay. So if you were dieting for a month and you were losing rate, being in an energy deficit of 500 calories per day, you could lose 2 kilos of body fat in a month.
Right. Yep. And that's sustainable too, because in terms of, it's definitely not going to be, you know, muscle mass as well. I mean,
no. This example is a bit of a thought process. It doesn't happen very linear like this because there's, you know, it's a bit more complicated, but we're talking about a linear process. So if you were at a 500 calorie deficit per day, you could lose 60 grams of fat per day. Okay, so if we put it into perspective, let's say you were in an energy deficit and you're losing 60 grams of body fat per day, and somehow you're genetically gifted that you could build muscle in an energy deficit, which is two conflicting ideas, and you were gaining muscle at the maximum rate of 10 grams of amino acid depositing per day, plus you were gaining that bit of water that comes with the tissue, so 30 grams per day, you could be losing 60 grams of body fat per day, but then gaining 30 grams of muscle per day. Okay, so we can start to see a little bit of a discrepancy. Okay, you might be going, well, Steve, maybe I'm on a 250 calorie deficit per day. That means I'm losing 30 grams of fat per day, but then I'm building 30 grams of muscle. Hey, it could be done if you're a super beginner. You know, super difficult for Nick and I, like, you know, we wouldn't be able to build muscle in an energy deficit. It just doesn't happen. It's conflicting things. We need resources to build muscle. We need an energy surplus. We can't be in an energy deficit while trying to build muscle. It's like trying to build a house, but you're taking supplies away and you're trying to build the house. Well, you know, you need like bricks and concrete and wood to build the house, right? So what I'm getting at is that if you are in it for the long term, right? If you are in it for multiple years, yes, you can see recomposition where you are slowly building muscle and losing weight at the same time where your body weight stays equal. If you want to lose weight, you could lose weight at a rate of about 60 grams per day, sometimes even more if you're in a bigger energy deficit. If you are trying to gain weight, scale back our expectations, because if everything was pin perfect, you could be gaining max, let's say 10 to 11 kilos per week, per year of muscle. But if you are going on a dirty bulk, let's say you're a dude like me, you're 80 kilos, you want to gain all the muscle and you gain 20 kilos in a year, I don't know, man, maybe 10 kilos of muscle if you're lucky, but then also 10 kilos of body fat, which is fine because it's easy to lose that body fat if you maintain that muscle. Different conversation if we go on some more illegal substances, but that is the rate of muscle growth.
Yeah, I love it. That is so fascinating to me. Even when you were talking, I was adding up my own figures and realizing, yeah, that it's going to be a long process from here.
Yeah.
Because I'm hoping, fingers crossed, if I can stick with it. Like, I know I tell all you guys, but so about a year worth of muscle gain now for me. So just probably it'll be about a kilo. But you know what? It really does make a difference to your physique when you get to that level as well, because there's other things that happen as well. It's not just about looks. But, yeah, so fascinating. Love it.
The only thing I would add on with that idea about our weight is that water plays a massive part of it. Like, it takes, you know, like I said, muscle is 2/3 water. So if you're dehydrated by, like, you know, 5%, that could be, you know, kilos in your body. And 5% could be just you waking up and just missing your morning chug of water, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, even when we're on stage, quite often, you know, the next day or two after that, you can go up by quite a bit in your weight. And that's why, you know, weight is just a number, really, because it can be very manipulated either way. It's just your relationship to gravity on that particular moment. But it's very interesting for data, and water makes a huge difference, and then for women, it's also, you know, you've got to know when your time of the month is, because that's going to make you retain water as well. So getting these stats exactly perfect, it might not necessarily be the way, but it's really interesting to know. And I do think it always comes down to how's your strength as well, because that's a good sign that muscle is happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, muscle can be heavier, like you said, time of the month. Maybe you had more salt. Maybe you had some more carbohydrate that's going to store more water in your muscle. Maybe you're on a creatine low that's going to store more water in your muscle. So now our body weight has fluctuated a lot. We go, wow, we've gained 5-10 kilos in the 6-week challenge. Oh, I don't know, man. Like, maybe you gained a whole bunch of water in your muscle. Your muscle looks really big. Maybe you're storing more glycogen in the muscle, which is awesome, but I'm not sure if there was true muscle growth, which takes a long time. So just need to be patient. We need to understand the process of building muscle, and it can be exciting because we go, well, okay, if everything's perfect, I could gain 11 kilos in a year if I'm perfect. All right, if I hit 5 kilos in a year, awesome, that's a win. You know, we got 50%. That's a pass. That's great.
That's it. And like, once you get more into the manipulation of how your body looks as well, you realize that you can actually use muscle glycogen. You can fill your muscles up and make them look bigger than what they might technically be. That's another way. So it's sometimes good to do that. And you might be 2 or 3. I could be up to 4 kilos heavier if I have a whole bunch of carbs, and then I actually look leaner, because I'm huge muscle-wise for me. And so, you know, those things are really interesting as well. That's why, it's really interesting to know what makes a muscle and how does a muscle go full. And it's not just about the muscle gain itself. Fascinating.
Let's move on to some questions for the week.
Okay.
So the first one here is, what do I eat before I train? So what do I eat before I work out? Nick, what advice would you give this individual?
This is so funny. Today's podcast is just making me hungry, because we're talking a lot about food and gaining. So the theme of today is food. So what do I eat before a workout and why? Well, I would say why, because if you've ever not eaten before a workout, which I've done heaps being a cardio junkie from way back, versus actually fueling yourself, if you've had time to do it, you know, I think personally for me, it's like about 90 minutes prior. I don't like to do it too much closer to than that. You actually feel the difference when you're lifting weights properly. You can actually feel that fuel and you have that extra energy just to do those couple of reps that you wouldn't actually know that you could do unless you've fueled yourself up, unless you've experimented. And it's only, it's as you would say, it's anecdotal, it's your own evidence. It's nothing that would hold up in any great research paper in terms of my own anecdotal evidence about it. But I would say what to eat, something that is reasonably quickly digested. So I would have myself, I personally love, this is my go-to, I love blueberries frozen because of the texture, with some protein powder and maybe a little bit of a banana. And that's it for me. That is my pre-workout meal. I like it. I feel like it's got enough carbohydrates. They're quite, they digest well with me. And I've got a bit of protein there. And happy days for me. And then I'll have something after as well. So for me, things that I have, banana, protein shake. If I know that I've got a huge session coming up, I may even have some sort of toast or something with peanut butter or a cereal even. I've become a bro. Like, I'll have some cereal, but something that I know that within my body works quite well and gives me that good fuel for, I just think of it as fueling directly into the muscles and then being able to utilize that fuel. So that's how I process that in my brain to say why. I also do have oats, but I find personally, since I've done comp prep, oats make me hungry. So I could eat a whole bag of oats and not feel full. But for some people, oats are good too. But I'd just say wait a little bit after having oats to work out. So it depends what time you might work out. So if you've got a full day of food under your belt, that's also really good. So just have your normal meals and then work out, and you'll find that that's probably, you probably got quite a bit of energy. But then on the other side of that, by the end of the day, you might be tired. So when you train, Steve, is pretty much optimal. I think that you train towards the middle of the day. Same here, pretty much. And we're lucky because we've got a couple of meals under our belt. But if you get up early, try and at least have a banana. Banana's the go-to.
I like it. That's good advice. I guess the main takeaway, like you said, Nick, is that it does depend on when you are choosing to train and then when you're choosing to eat. So if you are choosing to eat literally minutes before you train, okay, we want a fast digesting carbohydrate, like maybe a piece of fruit, maybe a small amount of protein, like, you know, maybe a banana in a protein shake blended up, something like that, really cool. But we don't want to be eating too much because that's just going to cause gastric distress. If you try to guzzle some food and then try to do something strenuous, that's food just coming straight back up.
Definitely. I remember, I won't go into the story of the tuna in the spin class, but because I used to teach spin at night and I would be hungry. And then I remember sometimes I would have a can of tuna sort of maybe about an hour before, and I'd get on the bike and I'd regret having that tuna because I was just hungry in the afternoon. So yeah, you have to really time it well.
Yep. Yep.
So you don't have the tuna in the spin class.
No tuna in the spin class or tuna in the pool. Unless you want to bring the tuna back to the water, but it's not.
Deliver it to whence it came. Never came from a chlorinated pool. So,
well, it's the circle of life, Nick. It rules us all.
Hakuna Matata. Hakuna Creatine.
Hakuna Creatine. Well, that leads to the next one, creatine. So another super frequent common question. Creatine, what does it actually do? What does it actually do? Okay. I will try not to bore you with some of the mechanistic things that happen in the body, but the super summary is that creatine affects the Krebs cycle and it affects the way that our body utilizes ATP. Now, ATP stands for adeno triphosphate, meaning that there's three phosphates, tri meaning three, and we use ATP for most reactions in our body. So whenever our body is using energy, ATP is involved in that. So me using my mouth, ATP. Me using my fingers, ATP. Me creating, things in my brain that sometimes happen, ATP. So we use ATP all the time. Now, when we use ATP, we lose a phosphate molecule. So it turns into ADP. ADP. So that stands for adeno diphosphate. Di-2. Now, part of that Krebs cycle is that we slowly grab those phosphates, mix them all together, make them back, and then reuse it into an ATP molecule. Creatine helps to recycle that lost phosphate. So we grab our ADP, we add that lost phosphate, and then turn it into a phosphate, creatine triphosphate. It's got a name. And then we recycle that. So what that means is that if we do supplement our body with creatine, and we saturate our body with creatine, because the way it works is it's through saturation that creatine lives in our muscle. It's not something that it's time dependent. So it's not like you have it now as a pre-workout to go train. It's something that you have over the course of weeks or months. So that body saturates in it and then it becomes useful for us. Then what happens is our body has more ATP available and recyclable, so that when we go to do max effort things like a 5 rep max on a squat, we might be able to do like a 6th or 7th rep. If we are lacking energy, we could recycle that ATP so that we have more energy throughout the day. That might mean that our brain is more active, our muscles can contract harder, or that we can be a little bit more, have longer endurance for events. So creatine, in summary, it affects the way that our body utilizes ATP, which is kind of like the currency our body uses to create energy. So imagine like a transaction between two people. We're sending them money, let that be the dollar, Bitcoin, whatever you want to call it. We can utilize ATP in our body. We utilize ATP to create those transactions. And if we have creatine in the areas, that means that maybe you've got a credit card now too. You can utilize more of it and recycle it over time. So that's creatine. It's not a drug. It's probably the most researched ergogenic aid and sports supplement on the market. Lots of research dating back to like 1950s, super safe. You can have a long term. I've had it for 10 years. It's great for the body.
And what time of the day do you take yours, or do you tend to take it at the same time every day? Do you think it matters? And do you think that there's an optimal time to take it?
Good question. Firstly, no optimal time to take it. For me, I take it when it's convenient. So I often have it in like a pre-workout simply so that I have it. Creatine does have an interesting taste. It's super chalky. So you can't just grab a spoonful of creatine and, you know, dry scoop it. Or just mix it with water, it'll be like, you know, but if you mix it with something like a pre-workout or even a protein powder, really easy to consume, just add it in and away you go.
I remember when I first had creatine years and years ago, I didn't realize that I popped it into water, and I'm like, is this really what everybody has every single day? It doesn't even mix properly. What's going on? But now, yeah, I like CreaBurn. I like the cola one because that it is an easy way and quite a treat, in a way, to have your creatine that way.
The only thing that's worse than creatine on its own, like, is BCAAs. Have you ever had BCAAs on its own?
Yeah. See, that put me off as well. I was like, what's that? So it's nice when people can make it into something that's a little bit more palatable, because you can't put everything. I mean, I guess you can, but it's pretty hard to put everything into a shake 24/7, especially if you're out and about. Like, you don't carry your Nutribullet with you all the time. So, yeah.
No good. That's creatine. Love creatine. Get on it.
Me too. I really believe that too. Love creatine. Mm-hmm.
The next question here is an old favorite. Nick, how do I get abs?
All right. So everybody's old favorite thing to say for that is the good old saying of abs are made in the kitchen, which the thing is, sure, it really is about getting that body fat to a low percentage. But, you know, the funny thing is it also depends, like, in terms of body fat loss, where you might tend to lose it first, because some people can have a set of abs, even if they've got a higher body fat percentage. So don't despair. You know, it is a bit of a genetic thing as well, whether you're going to show your abs. And even some people who get super, super lean may not show a complete six pack. It's just the way it is. It's the way that people's bodies are. We champion six packs because they are quite difficult to achieve and maintain, and, you know, have balance in your life. I will say also that, you know, people prepare for things where they know that they're going to sort of go in a direction of needing a six pack, and then they may go away from that direction as well. So it's something that isn't necessarily maintainable. But really, if you want the best body that you can have, and you want to see how you can go with getting a six pack. It's really about being super, super tight with your diet. Now, that's not about restricting calories necessarily. It's about following your plan. So if you're on a fat loss plan, keep following it. For the abs, I'm telling you, you don't want to do days where you kind of disregard your diet plan. You have to really stay on point. You have to focus on those abs. They will come and then they will go. And they will say hello and then they will go. So it's really important to stay on point. If I want to see my abs, I know that I've got to, mine are there, but like I've got to clarify them. I have to stay on absolute track with my diet. You've got to be hydrated. You want to also really focus on, say I was speaking to the champion from the two challenges ago, Jackie. She had a mad set of abs and she just said she had no compromise. Her husband was cooking the food for her because she was in the kitchen knowing that she would pick at the kids' food. So it's sort of a choice there, that the abs are sort of the extreme end of those choices that you make to really, really get super lean. The other thing that you can do though is once you are pretty lean, and what I've always had trouble with myself is because I've had the kids possibly, or perhaps I've neglected it a bit, is that core control. So over the last couple of years, I've made sure to really do exercises that will also just help me not to make them pop or anything like that, because that is done, you know, with your squats, with your deads, you work the abs all the time. But things like a plank, where you just also learn how to breathe through your rib cage, actually, to then hold the abs in, just little tricks like that that you can do, so you're always just a little bit tighter in that area. So yeah, there are just a few different things that you can do, but I'd say stay super tight with your diet first up, and also don't despair if it's the last place for you, because often for women, it's those lower abs and it's underneath the bum, that bit. Those two things are the things that will come off very, very, very last minute, and that's very, very normal as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Abby Kadabby.
Abby Kadabby.
Yep.
Well, yeah, talking about abs, you know, you don't need to abuse yourself to mm-hmm. get abs. Everybody
absolutely
is...
Absolutely not.
Everyone is able to get abs. You know, I think often it's the approach that we take to getting abs. You know, some individuals want to do, you know, the 1,000 sit-ups a day to try to get a six-pack, which often is the limiting factor. You're right, you know, abs are revealed in the kitchen, but they are really built in the gym. So we do need to load them like any other muscle. The most effective way to load our abs, you know, talking about the rectus abdominal, is through flexion. You know, we're taking the ab through that contraction, but the abs work literally all the time with every exercise that we do. It's one of the first muscles to contract. The first muscle to contract, of course, is our diaphragm. That muscle contracts first. And then it goes to our transverse abdominis. And that's before I even move my arms. All these muscles have contracted. So your abs are always working. And for the majority of individuals, we actually need no direct ab work to get a six pack. So for me, the first time I ever kind of dieted when I was an overweight kid, started losing weight. As I lost weight, my abs just appeared. And I was like, oh, I never did sit-ups. I just, you know, lifted weights. So they appear. They're there. They're always there. And if you didn't have abs, you wouldn't be able to stand up. So your abs are there. Only like those that would define themselves as advanced. You know, you've been training for 5 years plus, maybe like Coach Nick and myself. Okay, for us to continue to see ab growth, our abs getting bigger, we need to load them. So we would need to do some loaded ab work. But keyword loaded, we're not doing like a plank where we're using just our body weight. We want to be loading it like any other exercise. Okay, abs, they're fun.
They're a lot of fun. Just don't stress about them, and don't compare yourself to anyone else as well, because it's your own journey. And the other thing that I will say is the stars need to line up for abs as well. So just make sure that your sleep is good. They sort of reveal themselves when you've got all that going on as well. So it's a really good test for you to make sure that everything's going well. That's when the abs come. That's what I've noticed for me as well. So if I'm a little bit off, Abby Kadabbies go away.
Abby Kadabbies.
Mm-hmm.
The final question here, Nick, we're talking about one of our favorite muscles, the quadricep.
I love them. They're my favorites. Over abs, quads over abs. I've actually seen that hashtag on Instagram and I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling that.
Yeah, quads over abs. I like it. So we're going to be talking about the best quad exercises. Best quad exercises. Let's take it through. So first thing that we need to understand is first, like the rough anatomy of the quadriceps. That's important. The actions of the quadriceps. That's important. And then how we can put it all together. So the first thing I would say is the quadriceps mean quad four and seps means heads. So the quadricep has four heads on it. Okay, so we've got four areas of the quadricep. So we have three muscle or three heads of that quadricep which attach from the kneecap up into the upper thigh. Okay, then we have one of those four that is from that kneecap up until like the top of the hip. So the quadricep, what it does is it does knee flexion, which is bending the knee. Straightening the legs. So it does knee extension. That's the one. Then it also does hip flexion, which is when you bring your thigh closer to your chest. So when we look at the best quadricep exercises, we want to be choosing an exercise where we are straightening our leg. And then also we could look at other exercises where we are moving the thigh closer to the chest, hip flexion, okay? Now, remember when we're looking at muscles, we can train the muscles in a lengthened state when we put it under a stretch, and then also in a contracted state when we are squeezing the muscle. And then we can apply those loads into those different areas. So when it comes to choosing the best quad exercise, the first thing I'd say is that it's tricky to say the best one because it's so individual to the person. And it's all about what stimulus you put onto it. So you might be doing one leg exercise, like we all know the leg extension, that machine, you strap yourself in and straighten your leg. Some individuals, you might do that and you feel just like a real nasty quad burn and a pump and you're like, whoa, geez, I feel my quads. Others, you're like, I just don't like it. I don't feel it. It's not my thing, all right? We don't like the leg extension. But another individual might move over to the hack squat and be like, whoo, this is my jam. I feel the burn. I feel the pump. I don't need a lot of load and I can feel my quads working. So it really is an individual thing. And we're mainly looking for the stimulus on the muscle. Okay. When we are looking at the exercises, we can look at concepts like, get this one, Nick, the raw stimulus magnitude, which is how much stimulus we can actually apply through the muscle. So let's say, use an example like a Bosu ball. We all know a Bosu ball. If you were standing on that Bosu ball, uneven surface and trying to do a squat, you know, you might struggle with just your body weight. You're not putting much raw stimulus into your quadricep. And you compare that to something like, let's say, a hack squat or a leg press. You've strapped yourself in, everything's stable, everything's sturdy. There's not a lot of moving parts like a squat. You know, you've strapped yourself in and you could press. You know, most individuals could press 100 kilos, 200, 300, 500 kilos on a leg press because they're quite loaded. So they can put a lot of stimulus into their quadricep because they're taking away the technical side of things. So that does play an important role, okay? So when it comes to the best quad exercises, of course, we can't go past our good friend, the squat. The squat is always really cool because if we go down nice and deep, we take the quadricep into a stretch position. And then when we stand up, we take it into a shortening position. The load is quite consistent through that range of motion of the quadricep. Squat. Lots of ways to squat. You know, we've got high bar squat, low bar squat, front squat, the safety bar squats. Name the squat, someone's tried it, okay? But you know, we just want to find something that's comfortable for us to complete the squat. If we are choosing to reduce the squat range of motion, we're just not taking the quadricep into stretch. So if you can't go down, quote, ass to grass, that's cool. We're just not taking the quadricep into stretch, but we're still placing load through the quadricep and it can still be an effective exercise. If you want to make it easier and you could like squat down into a box or a bench or a chair or something like that, heck, we do it every day when we go to the toilet or jump into a car or sit down on a chair, we all squat. We can do that. We're just reducing the range of motion, making it a little bit easier, okay? Mm.
Did you ever have small quads?
Did I ever have small quads? Mm. There was a time where I didn't know how to train legs. I was beginner, I didn't really know. So I didn't really have developed legs. But now I've learned how to train my legs. And I would say I'm okay with my quads, except I don't notice them growing until I put on pants or shorts and I realize I need to buy new shorts. So that's always a win.
Yeah, because you got huge quads. So
they're okay.
Want to know.
Now, other exercises we could do if we can't squat are things like a lunge. Lunge is always great. So we can do a lunge forward, lunge backwards, lunge to the side, curtsy lunge. Lots of ways we can do that lunge.
Split squat.
Yeah. Or we can also do other single leg exercises like a step up or even a step down. Okay. So there's other ways we can load that quadricep. Some really cool machines, of course. We can't go past our friends, the leg press, which is a little bit more variable because we don't actually take the knee through full flexion. What a really great exercise, which is a favorite for lots of pro bodybuilders, is the hack squat. But not just the hack squat where you lower the damn thing all the way down to the bottom and then you stand up. You bend their neck, you really feel that burn. Pro tip around training your quads is that we can make the movement a little bit easier by taking away the requirements of our ankles to be involved. So when we're doing a squat pattern, we're trying to train the quadriceps, we need the knees to travel past the toes. We need it to happen. You can't squat training your quadriceps by having your knees like not traveling past your toes. So we can make that easier by utilizing, let's say, a heel raise, so maybe a heel wedge, maybe you put a plate under your shoes, or you invest in some weightlifting shoes. So if you really wanted to grow some quads, I'd recommend that you invest in something like some wedges, and you could do squats, hack squat, that type of thing with them on. And then a pro tip that I think about is, I know that the knee goes through flexion, where the heel goes closer to the glute, but then it also goes through extension, where you straighten it up, but then it also goes through an element of, past extension. So if you were to straighten your leg now, wherever you are, straighten your leg, it doesn't just go to 180 degrees straight, it goes, you know, to 190 degrees, it goes that extra like 5 to 10 degrees, right? That little bit of extension past straight, okay? Most individuals face knee problems because they lose that extension, and we need that extension for walking. We need it for standing up, right? We need that element of like that hyperextension past 180 degrees. Most of us, lose that and then are afraid to train it and get it back. So for me, when I'm doing squats, as I go to stand up, I'm really trying to get my legs straight into like a what most people would look like as a lockout position, but then that little bit further. So real squeeze, same with like a leg extension, real squeeze. A lunge, real squeeze. Hack squat, real squeeze. Leg press, real squeeze. And I think that pays dividends in quad growth, okay? Then, of course, you can look at other exercises which put the most load into the quadricep when it's fully contracted. That could be like a leg extension or something like a Spanish squat, sissy squat. We're talking about the extension element, not the stretch element. Then also something like a terminal knee extension TKE, which you can place a resistance band. You can find on the template. Really fun one if you really want to get a quad pump. So lots of ways to train the quads. Once you kind of fall in love with quad training, you know, there's nothing really else other than quads and legs.
I agree. I'm obsessed. I mean, I had to be told a million times to train my upper body by judges, by everyone, because all I ever wanted to do was train my legs. So if you ever do one of my classes, it goes on and on and on about legs. I'm very obsessed. So you know how you were saying before about pendulum squats, I love them as well for quads. There's nowhere to hide with those.
Pendulum squat is like one of the ultimates, because you take the quad through the stretch element and then you take it through the full contraction element, and the load is placed upon the entire range of motion. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, go Google a pendulum squat. Think of like a pendulum or like a swing, and you're sitting in the saddle and you straighten your legs and you kind of swing one way, swing the other way, you load it up, and it's brutal. It's brutal, but it's a good one.
Very good.
I think most individuals would claim that they just don't have genetics for legs or quad training and such, which I think everybody has an element to grow their quads. I think it just comes down to the way that we train them. And one example is, you know, I used to train someone, powerlifter bro, could comfortably squat, you know, 220 for reps. He had quads, but they weren't like, you know, the big juicy quads.
Mm.
Then I had another guy that I was training once upon a time, massive quads, didn't squat much, you know, maybe like on a good day, 100 kilos, but you know, he had tree trunks for legs. Everyone was jealous of his quads. But watching him squat, it was always like slow, controlled. You could see the quadricep taking the load, you know, he learned how to train his quads by not using a lot of load. So what I'm getting at is that sometimes we need to learn how to train the muscle. And sometimes, here's a fun thought experiment for you, Nick. Sometimes as we become more advanced, we use less weight on the bar to get a better stimulus.
100%. That's where I'm living at the moment. Absolutely. Like, and things are actually happening reasonably well. It's just you've got to trust that as well. You've got to not ego lift. But that's, you know, if you want to do that, you go to powerlifting because it's lots of fun.
It is. It is. And yeah, just continue on that idea. Like the more advanced you become, yeah, the less weight you use and the less exercise you do because you get a better stimulus and you just simply can't do more.
Yes. And everything hurts more, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's an interesting place to live.
So like for me, I'm actually going to go do squats later today. I've got about 100 kilos on the bar and I'm dreading it because I know how disgusting it feels on my quads. But rewind, if you follow me on Instagram, just a few weeks, maybe a month ago, I was, you know, squatting the high hundreds, even into the 200s for reps. And that, if anything, was a little bit easier because I'm utilizing my whole body to do it. But to try to use squats for hypertrophy, whoo, it sucks. It's great. So, you know, the weight is a tool. And, you know, if we did have true advanced programs in the challenge, Nick, hear me out. If we had true advanced programs in the challenge, there would be much less volume than the intermediate programs, which many individuals would probably be complaining to Coach Steve, being like, Steve, why is there less work in the advanced program? And for that individual, I'll probably say maybe the advanced program's not for you in the nicest way. So, but that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. See, I don't really know. I'm not so great at cars, but I'm assuming that a Ferrari, its engine is a lot more efficient than something that's a little bit cheaper. So think about it like that. That's an advanced car. You know, it knows what to do. It needs a little bit more TLC. You need a lot of recovery when you're advanced as well. But I guess that's another podcast down the track. But what does it mean to be advanced?
Yeah.
Stay tuned, everybody.
Even thinking about that Ferrari, like, geez, that will go and that will guzzle up fuel when it goes as well. Or you can drive your Corolla and just cruise along the highway, just, you know, doing your thing. So, you know, we can go harder, faster for a shorter period of time, or we can just cruise and do all the things. And often we want to be hard, fast, in and out, fuel ourselves up, burn the fuel, and, you know, be good to go. So, you know, just some thought processes for you today.
But this has motivated me to go and train my quads immediately. How about yourself?
I am going to go and get ready for my leg session. I'm going to go have a meal for my pre-workout meal. I'm going to go have a smoothie. So I'm going to have a banana smoothie. I'm going to throw in some oats in there. And then I'm going to have my pre-workout on the way to the gym. It's going to be great, Nick. It's going to be great.
Oh, well, see, quads of the gods. You've heard it here first. This is what Coach Steve does on his leg day. We might follow Coach Steve in the gym one day and see what he does on his leg day.
It'll be legcellent.
It will be excellent.
Excellent. But look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 42, which is The Meaning of Life, 42. Do you ever read that book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yeah. So yeah. 42. Can I just 42. Also say that I'm 42 years old as well?
Ah, Meaning of Life, Nick. There you go. Happy 42th birthday. 42nd birthday.
Well, it's going to be 43 in Feb. So
yeah, that's next year. Out. All right, 43 on Tuesday.
That's right. I know the Feb thing. That'll be later on. Yes. Yep.
Good. No, okay, awesome. Episode number 42, Meaning of Life. If you enjoy this episode, you can check out 41 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show. That's over a full-time week of listening to Coach Nick and I with banter, with information, with advice, and everything in between. If you like this episode, let us know. You could share it on places like Instagram. You can leave us a review on places like iTunes, or you can just let your friends know that you found this awesome thing and they should listen to it too. And we'll catch you next week for episode number 43.
See you, everybody. Thank you.